Have a question or need how-to advice? Just ask Meta AI. Whether you want to design a marathon training program or you're curious what planets are visible in tonight's sky, Meta AI has the answers. It can also summarize your class notes, visualize your ideas, and so much more. It's the most advanced AI at your fingertips. Expand your world with Meta AI. Now on Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Messenger.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hello, survivalists. This is The Crux, and I'm your host, Casey McIntosh, joined by Julie Henningsen. Today, we will be telling the story of Wolf Wagner and John Honch, two German men that decide a canoe trip on the Hayes River in northern Canada would be a fun outing. But they're wrong. Despite a lot of proper planning, they could have never imagined the obstacles that were going to head their way.
Oh, I'm intrigued, Casey. It sounds like a good one. That does sound like it would be a fun trip, but I have a feeling it won't be.
It started out fun. So these are young men. They're probably in their 20s. They're from Germany. In 2016, they went to Croatia on a sailing trip. And at that point, Wolf asked John if he wanted to do something else. They'd had a good connection. They became good friends. Then they decided, let's go find some adventure, but let's leave Europe to do it. They start looking at Canada, and they ended up deciding to go to Lake Winnipeg or Hudson Bay. Those were the areas they were interested in. And they ended up deciding that they would take a canoe from Lake Winnipeg to the Hudson Bay on this river called the Hayes River. The Hayes River's physical characteristics are including large lake systems and waterfalls, deep valleys, gorges, and these tidal flats, which are essentially coastal wetlands that form in intertidal areas where sediment have been deposited by tides or rivers, or whitewater rapids, actually. So they're almost like ponds, shallow sedimentary ponds. I don't believe the two travelers knew a lot about the river itself. I'm not sure how much research they did about the Hayes River. They were planning on taking the Hayes River for 3 weeks, and then they were going to walk 4 days to this other town called Gillam. Before they made the final decision to make this trip, they rented a canoe while they were still in Europe. They paddled it together just to see if they would be a good fit on a canoe. And they found out that they could actually make a very long distance in one day together. Online, they found a family in Canada who sold them their canoe, and they didn't see the craft before they left Europe. They never physically saw it until they got to the airport, and the family was from Winnipeg. They picked the travelers up at the airport with the canoe on their vehicle. And then they took these German men to the train station with the canoe. And these guys, they were like pretty young, college age. They didn't want to pay for a place to stay. So they just slept on the street overnight. It's good to be rested before a big trip, right? And then they ended up waiting around for about a day because the route that they were going to go on got canceled for the day, and they ended up taking a bus. The train station said, we'll ship your canoe to you tomorrow. And they had this canoe on a trolley, so a little stand with wheels to help transport it through areas where there wasn't water. And they communicated with the people at the train station, hey, this is super important. This needs to come too. But when they got their canoe the next day, the trolley was not there.
Oh, just the canoe, no trolley.
Right. So they also had two backpacks. Each of them had two backpacks with two pairs of shoes, sleeping bags, maps for navigation, and a bunch of other gear. They had to carry the canoe until they reached the water, which was pretty heavy. In addition to all of the other gear I mentioned, they also had knives and two different types of stoves with different methods of heating and a GPS device. So they had a good first day. They had good weather. And it seems like all these stories start out this way. They felt prepared and they felt really good about the trip and the planning and preparation they'd done. The water was calm and clear. And they traveled about 9 p.m., which they said was a mistake because the mosquitoes were absolutely everywhere. They didn't bring any insect repellent. So that was definitely a mistake they made.
Yeah, that's a disaster up in that part of the country or in that part of the world. In summertime, I've been there. Bugs are bad. They'll drive you nuts.
Oh, yeah. So what they realized is that if they quit paddling at around 6 or 7 p.m., they would be able to get away from the worst of the insects. They just had to get into their camp a little bit earlier. So these men had a lot of food and water. They knew where they could get more food. There's this place, Oxford House, that they could get food. They went about 30 to 40 kilometers a day. Sometimes they would slide the boat over grassy areas when they ran out of water. Because again, it's not like it's all this contiguous river or something. There's just these little waterways they're having to try to put together. And they shouldn't have done that because they ended up bashing the bottom of the boat a little bit. They did have a repair kit, so they worked for a few hours and tried to do what they could to repair it. So they ended up in Oxford House, and then they knew after that point there wasn't going to be cell phone service for a couple weeks of the distance. They ended up getting to this point in the river where there were 3 to 4 series of rapids. And they were scouting every single one of them as they went. They were getting out of the boat. They were walking around. They were portaging the canoe whenever they could and trying to avoid going through rapids at any cost. At one point, they're going down the river and they crash the canoe, the hull, into the rock, a giant rock that they didn't see when they were scouting. So it basically took a fistful size of the hull out of the canoe. The hull on the inside was only a centimeter or two. So really, even though they smashed the boat up pretty well, it wasn't filling with water. They just decided, well, we can continue down the river with this. It's fine. I don't know if they patched that hole or not. The next day, they get back in the canoe and they face more rapids. They did fine until this rapid, which I'm probably going to not say it right, was Nunapawaga Rapid, and there was no way to portage it. There were 3 different tributary areas all going down at once. They ended up scouting for 50 to 60 minutes. And they knew this was the last rapid they were going to face of the day. After a lot of deliberating, they decided to take the middle route. The problem with this situation is that the water was really shallow. It was only 10 to 20 centimeters, and there were rocks galore literally everywhere. And then there were these step downs. So initially, they decided, we're just going to carry our boat and all of our stuff. But then they got to a place where it was too rocky to continue doing that. And they really couldn't go back up, and they couldn't go down. And so they had to make this decision to either tie their gear up in the boat and just send it downstream and hope that it would make it, or try to continue to carry it. Well, actually, they couldn't really carry it. It was either they sent the boat or they got in it and decided to try to go down this rapid section, which is pretty much impossible. They ended up getting stuck on all these rocks. And at one point, the canoe ended up perpendicular to the river around a rock, and they ended up really being in this horrible situation. Like, the canoe was pretty much destroyed, and they had to figure out how to get the canoe with all of their gear to this side of the river without losing their stuff. So finally, they were actually able to get out of the river with the canoe, all of their stuff intact. None of it ended up going downstream. And they decided to just camp out there for the night. The canoe, it was completely worthless at that point. I mean, it was broken in the middle. It would completely sink if they put it in any volume of water. They considered trying to do something with it and ultimately realized that there was no saving the boat. It just had to go. They ended up being able to dry all of their stuff on some cord. And Wolf's diary, this is just an irony, he had written that there were 240 kilometers to walk if anything happened. He wrote that in his diary a few days before this whole situation with the canoe.
That's a long way. Yeah.
It's a long ways. So they must have made some distance, because when they looked at their map, they had 120 kilometers. all around them, and there was no civilization. And it was about 110 kilometers to Gillam, where they originally were trying to go. And they had to walk because literally there was no other way of getting out of that situation. A straight line would have been about 110 kilometers, but the way that they had to walk was 130. They knew that having water was going to be their biggest concern. They did have a ton of food with them, so that was good. They ended up having to leave a bunch of their gear behind because it was just too much to carry. I think something that they left behind was their tent. They did have a tarp. Hmm. They left a note on the boat that said, "Hey, we're walking out." Basically, they left it with the canoe. "Hey, we're walking out, FYI, anyone who cares." And initially, okay, these are young guys. They're in really good shape. They think, oh, we're going to do 20 to 30 kilometers a day. No problem. It's fine.
I'm guessing there's no trails either. They're just kind of going overland.
Yeah, just wait. It's terrible.
Okay.
They were really good about determining what gear they were going to need and what direction they were going. So I have to commend them for having maps and for having a GPS, because that's really what saved them. So these men would have to struggle daily to get themselves out of this situation, and they had not reached the crux of this experience, if you will. This is like not even the tip of the iceberg yet. You know what I mean? Like, I would imagine they feel like we went through this harrowing experience on this river, which was horrible. And they probably felt just like idiots with this boat that completely was a flop. And then I'm sure they're thinking, well, we're in shape. It's going to be fine. You know, we know where we're going. How bad could it be?
Yeah, they might have thought the worst was over.
Right. So I want to set the stage for you, but I'm not going to get too into the details because there's a lot of information about this area. But the men were traveling through the Canadian boreal forest. This area is an enormous region that's made up of circumpolar boreal forests that is in the northern hemisphere, north of the 50th parallel. Countries that make up this forest, aside from Canada, are Russia, which is, that's where the majority of this forest is, U.S. and northern Alaska, northern Europe, including Sweden and Norway. And in Canada, the boreal forest covers 60% of the land mass, and only 13% of the population lives in that region. It's covering 620 miles north to south, and it's considered the world's largest intact forest without roads, cities, or any industrial development. So you are literally in one of the most remote places in the entire world, aside from the ocean. So there are coniferous forests and spruce, but it also has these contiguous areas of wetlands with bogs and fens. And bogs are essentially wetlands that are an accumulation of peat from dead plant material and trees and whatnot. And they are sort of on a water base, and then there's shrub growth coming up through this stuff. The landscape is home to more lakes and rivers than any compatible landscape on Earth. It's estimated that this region has 1.5 million lakes. It's just an estimate. There's too many to even count.
That's wild.
Yeah, and the trees in the northern area are smaller. They basically are smaller and smaller until you get to the Arctic tundra. And the Hudson Bay lowlands and the Mackenzie River Basin are among the 10 largest wetlands worldwide. So all this to say, there's a lot of wetness there. And the temperatures in the summer can reach mid to high 80s, but most of the time it's cooler than that. The rainfall is actually not as much as you would anticipate because it kind of abuts the mountain ranges, and a lot of this moisture that would be coming from the coast doesn't make it all the way over to this area. But in any case, it's wet. It doesn't have to rain to be wet here. There's just water all over the place, which you know what that means. Again, like we were mentioning before, mosquitoes. So they noted immediately that travel would be incredibly slow because they had to traverse all over these boggy areas. So there's no firm ground to stand on anywhere. You step on it, it feels like it's going to hold your weight, and then you basically are stepping in water. Mosquitoes, of course, are terrible. And after this first day, major arduous travel, they found that they only went 6 kilometers.
Oh, no.
After all, yeah. It was horrible. They were absolutely exhausted. This sounds miserable. Oh, they also were hunkering down in the tarp, so I don't know. I think if I was in this situation, I definitely would want to carry the extra weight of the tent just because that's the only way you get away from those bugs. They would eat 2 pieces of toast with chocolate spread, which I'm assuming is Nutella, for breakfast and lunch every day. And then they ate noodles with soup every night. They were good about drinking water every hour. And they found that just from the earth they were walking on. They boiled all the water and they used water tablets to keep the water safe. To keep themselves motivated, they would just go for 30 minutes and then take a 5-minute break throughout the day. And then when they would get to 80% of the way done, they would eat a fruit bar. Just that was like their treat for the day.
Sounds like they had decent food rations. It could have been worse.
Yeah, they also had a really good system. But every morning they woke with wet socks and shoes. And one morning they had frost on their shoes. The only thing that was keeping them going was the thought of eating a pizza and seeing their girlfriends again.
That's funny.
Like, not cheese pizza. Yeah. The two worked as a team to keep each other positive and motivated. They had to cross many rivers and even some lakes. They had to cross about 3 to 4 rivers a day, which had to be brutal because they were taking some of their gear off and putting life vests on, and then they were just being eaten by mosquitoes. At one point, Wolf actually slipped on a rock and ended up landing on his hip. And they then realized, like, oh, something could happen to one of us, and that's going to be a real big problem. They started thinking a lot more about safety at that point, and they were just trying to be really careful as they were traveling. It was just tough because this is uneven ground. They had to walk through a partial forest that had been burned, and there were all these logs that were laying over on their sides. And you could step on it, but not necessarily know if it was going to hold your weight. So they were mentioning that was a little bit tenuous. After they made it about half the distance, they became a lot more motivated, and they finally realized that this passage was possible. The third day was the most difficult because it rained most of the day and they had to stop periodically to cover themselves with their tarp. They didn't really see any signs of human life until day 8 when they saw a helicopter fly overhead, but they wouldn't be able to be spotted because there was this area of just brush everywhere. On day 10, with all of their provisions gone, they knew they were really close to the road. They could tell that they were only 500 meters away. They kept walking and they started wondering, where is the road? It should be right here. But thankfully, they just kept walking in a straight line and they eventually found some trash that was lying on the ground and they knew that they were close to the road. They thought that the moment they got to the road, they were going to be saved. You know, they thought, certainly we're going to see a car. Someone's going to pick us up. They were so overjoyed. They were hugging each other. They felt like this was the victory moment. But then vehicles started passing by. Granted, this road cannot be traveled very often because it's still in a really remote area. They just figured someone would stop, but five cars drove by and didn't stop to see if they were okay. They were finally just like, I guess we're having to walk 3 hours to Gillam. They knew how far away it was and how long it would take him to get there. But finally, a safety officer, this guy named Aaron Shell, he was from Manitoba. He stopped to ask them if they were okay. And the thing that tipped him off, which I think is hilarious, is that one of the guys had on a cowboy hat, and apparently that's not very common in that area. And then the other thing is that one of the guys was carrying a paddle. He's like, that's a little bit weird. And once they got into his truck, he was like, I wonder if these guys are totally crazy or if they're actually legit, because they started telling him the story about what happened to them, and it's just completely outlandish. Aaron said that they were lucky it was as warm as it had been that time that they were out there, because if it was cooler, there would have been a lot more mosquitoes and it would have been even almost more impossible to deal with it. So he drove them into town and he took them to the inn and bought them all beers.
They got their priorities straight. Priority number one.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's justified for sure.
Yeah.
So they took long showers and messaged their families just saying that they were out of the woods, but they didn't indicate to anyone what actually happened until they got home because it was just too much at that point. What's crazy about this story is that they kept in time with their original plans, even though the way that they got there was completely out of the direct path. Their bus tickets, their plane tickets.
That's amazing.
I know. Isn't that crazy? They're like, we didn't have to reschedule anything. So they were out there for walking for 10 to 11 days.
Oh, yeah.
Before that, he had already been out for a couple of weeks, but the whole time that they were supposed to be gone was a month. So they must have been on the water almost as long as they expected to be. I'm not sure. So anyway, they had to bring this paddle home with them because they felt like it was something that they needed to hold on to. They attempted to saw it in half with this little multi-tool, which obviously did not work. So they just broke it. Somebody stood on it and broke it in half, and then they brought it home with them. And once they got back to Germany, they glued it together and then sawed it in half lengthwise so each of them could keep half of it.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So these guys want to go back and finish the trip. They want to do it all over again, which is crazy.
I was just going to agree. That is crazy. I think they had to be a little crazy to do it in the first place.
I think I agree with you. So I read an article in CBC about this story, and it was talking about this Saskatchewan paddler who has a lot of experience paddling and just being in the outdoors. This individual in the article, they called him Robertson. He was doing the same exact trip, and they came upon this canoe and the note and then the gear, which a black bear apparently had gotten into. And he called this canoe a Mickey Mouse canoe. And he just worried about these men the entire remainder of his trip. But this is what he had to say about the boat. So first of all, it's fiberglass with a folded keel. It's suitable for a day paddle on a pond. And most travelers travel in boats made of ABS plastic or composite material. And this is a direct quote. When we first saw this canoe, this Mickey Mouse rat shit canoe, I found it hard to believe anyone would be foolish enough to take that route with such poor equipment. It was hard to wrap your head around what we were seeing.
That family from Winnipeg did not do them right.
Yeah, and they were like, well, the family was nice. So I don't think that they harbored any ill feelings towards the family. But what I just wanted to talk about briefly was how prepared and ill-prepared these guys were. You know, like they obviously knew what they were doing in a lot of ways. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made it through the 10-day walking ordeal that they did. But I don't think that they researched the river enough. And I don't think they really understood the terrain that they were going to be walking through, you know, especially not having any bug spray. So, but I mean, they did have a GPS and they also had a bunch of maps. They just needed to maybe take a course on canoeing or something. And the thing, too, is that this is a really high stakes operation for somebody who's just getting into canoeing. And I think if you're going to have a fail, you want to be doing it in an area where you're not in the middle of nowhere. You know, maybe start on a smaller, shorter river section in a less remote area.
Yeah, a smaller trip in a more populated area. So if you run into trouble, there's going to be help.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure they'll do some research when they get their next canoe.
They'll probably swing the pendulum way far in the other direction and get like the nicest, most burly, bomb-proof canoe on the market.
That John, he was really tall too. So when he was in the canoe, he was just, you know, really squished in it. So you might want to get in it and feel it out before you decide to paddle in it for 3 weeks.
Good advice.
Do you have any thoughts about that, Julie?
I just keep thinking about the mosquitoes.
To me, that would make me not want to be in that area at all. I don't know.
Yeah, that
just doesn't sound fun.
Enough to keep me from wanting to go back. But I guess if you bring some bug spray or a to wear over your face, those things work great.
For sure. You just have to douse yourself in DEET every morning.
Yeah, what could go wrong with that?
All right. Well, I'm super excited for these young men. I'm so glad that they made it out. I'm also, this is an odd story because typically with these type of things, people's families are terrified of their whereabouts. They're losing sleep every night over it. And these guys, they just forged their way and made it home before anyone even knew that they were missing.
Yeah. They got to tell their family the end of the story when they told them the start of the story, which is pretty rare and pretty cool for their family.
Yeah, thank goodness. And they got to eat their pizza and see their girlfriends once again. All right. Well, that concludes our episode today of the Crux 2 Survival Stories. And please share with your friends or give us a review. We appreciate it. Have a good week.
Have a question or need how-to advice? Just ask Meta AI. Whether you want to design a marathon training program or you're curious what planets are visible in tonight's sky, Meta AI has the answers. It can also summarize your class notes, visualize your ideas, and so much more. It's the most advanced AI at your fingertips. Expand your world with Meta AI. Now on Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Messenger.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Sean LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.